News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
What's going on? Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings live downtown. Things getting humming now with the Veterans Day Parade. We're right on the Canal Service Road and in front of some guy's house. You're looking live at some guy's house. And we're here for Veterans Day, and now some of the veterans are coming around, and I just love it. It's a great day to be downtown.
Yeah, this is our annual thing. I can't remember how many years we've been doing this now. This must be year 7 or 8 at least, and it's a different move this year for us and for the entire parade. Is of course they are doing all that work on taking the current Civic Center down and putting a new one up. You have that big Army Corps of Engineers office that's just shot straight up quickly, and the parking garage as well. So of course that means that, well, we can't get into the Civic Center parking lot as they normally stage the parade there, and we get our mobile command unit in. So they're changing it up this year, and the parade will be lining up in one long line on Canal Street. We are on the Canal Street Service Road, closest to the Civic Center on that portion of the service road. You'll see the mobile command unit if you come on by, and we'd love for you to come on by as our Veterans Day coverage presented by LNS Air. We want to thank Larry Skoda and the entire team there at LNS for doing this. They've done it every year. Also, Azalea Coffee Service and Wayne Biggs. We have a bunch of water out here to keep you hydrated. And Patty and the whole team at Allegri Farm Market and Daphne also brought some good snacks down to get you filled up before the parade begins. We have donuts, we have fruit, and we'll also have coffee here momentarily from Yellowhammer Coffee as well. So we appreciate everybody who chipped in and helped out, and we want you to come by and see us. So the parade itself, Dan, they'll line up on Canal. Then at 10 o'clock, they will head north on South Broad Street.
Yeah, they go Canal to Broad, hang a right.
And then they'll hang a right onto Government, head eastbound on Government all the way to South Claiborne, where they hang another right and bring it all the way back to where it started. So if you can find a good spot along those, along that route, it looks like, according to the map they have here, they'll be about halfway through, or they'll be making the turn from Government to Claiborne at around 10:30, the front of the parade will,
okay,
just for if you're trying to time things out here.
And I think the weather's going to get better, too.
Yeah, it's stopped raining. Earlier when we arrived, it was raining pretty good. It has since stopped, and we have the awning out here as well. So if you come by, you'll be able to hop under that awning. Not that you need it right now. Today, they'll be honoring the 2024 Veteran of the Year, and we are so excited. We're excited every year, but especially this year, because Tom Claxton, United States Marine Corps veteran, has been named the Veteran of the Year. And, of course, we love Tom at FM Talk 106.5. We'll see if he turns it around and gets in for the car show tonight. We'll have to see on that. I think he's going to have a pretty packed day. But, of course, Scuttlebutt Network on Wednesday nights as well, where you can catch Tom Claxton and Cal Walters as they cover the news that's important to veterans. So kind of a quick lineup, and then we'll get to really great interviews that Dan Brennan had at William F. Green Veterans Home last week with a couple veterans. But you have at 10 a.m., that's the start of the parade here. At noon, the Veterans Day Luncheon at Fort Whiting on Broad Street, where they honor the Veteran and Patriot of the Year. So I mentioned the Veteran of the Year is Tom Claxton. Patriot of the Year this year is Sergeant Major Brian Battaglia. A great conversation he had with Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile last week. He's retired U.S. Marine Corps. He is the Patriot of the Year. They will be honored at the luncheon at Fort Whiting at noon. At 3 p.m. this afternoon, the Veterans Day Celebration and Parade of Flags. That will be at Battleship Memorial Park, honoring our veterans. That is free admission, open to the public. And the fourth grade students from both counties presenting the Parade of Flags. They'll also have patriotic music, presentations, and essays by winners of the Veterans Day Essay Contest. At 7 o'clock tonight, the Veterans Day Concert at the Memorial Park. That will be at the Medal of Honor Aircraft Pavilion. 7 to 9 p.m., the Mobile Symphonic Pops performing a heartfelt collection of patriotic music and a special salute to veterans. That also free and open to the public. They'll also be doing a Veterans Day blood drive at the Battleship Park all day from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can get an appointment at donors.lifesouth.org. Let me run through some of the other events. Just want to let everyone know about these in our area before we get to this interview. You have in North Baldwin at Bay Minette, the North Baldwin Chamber of Commerce Veterans Day program. That got started about 10 minutes ago as they have a breakfast, a parade, and ceremonies honoring veterans. Also, lunch plates available for purchase at Blackburn Park, and those proceeds will go towards veteran services. So that begins at John F. Road Civic Center in Bay Minette and began a few minutes ago. At 10:30, you have the Veterans Day celebration at Post 44 in Gulf Shores. a flag retirement ceremony, live music, and a complimentary meal for Post 44 members. How about this? Veterans receive 3 free draft beers or well drinks there, and we're going to honor our veterans there in Gulf Shores. That starts at 10:30 and runs till 4 this afternoon. In Pensacola, the Veterans Memorial Park Foundation invites active duty military personnel, veterans, families, and community members to attend the Veterans Day ceremony. That event will feature live music from the Blue Anchor Bells, and they'll have presentations including the ringing of the bell at the Marine Aviation Memorial Tower, honoring veterans at Veterans Memorial Park in Pensacola. That starts at 11 this morning. City of Foley Veterans Day Parade begins at noon. You can honor the military veterans there, organized by American Legion Post 99. And again, that starts at noon at Max Griffin Park. A ceremony at at American Legion Post 99 in Foley will follow. That's free. Veterans Day Sunset Prayer Service in Fairhope starts at 4:45 this afternoon and runs till 6 this evening. That's going to be at Henry George Bluff Park. And salute to veterans at the Coastal Arts Center in Orange Beach tonight at 6. They will have live music in their annual tribute to veterans. And those tickets are $15, available at the Coastal Arts Center.
Got a chance to get up to the William F. Green State Veterans Home, thanks to Stephen Davis, the administrator up there, and a friend of mine, and got a chance to get a couple of interviews. Always very interesting. The first is with U.S. Coast Guard Captain Maury Weeks. Listen in and just listen to his story. Pretty amazing. I'm with Captain Maury Allen Weeks, originally from?
Mobile, Alabama.
Really?
Yes.
Where'd you go to school?
Murphy.
Okay. Right in the heart of the city?
Yeah.
Maybe back then it was out west. I don't know.
No, it was a part of the town back then.
Okay. You joined the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve in 1966. Can you talk about your journey and how you ended up with the United States Coast Guard from there?
Yeah, I was in school at the time at South Alabama, and Vietnam was just starting to heat up pretty much, and I wanted to do something, but I had made a promise to my family that I wouldn't enlist, so I kind of compromised and joined the reserve program at out there at Municipal at the time, mm-hmm. where the Marines were.
Oh, well.
Yeah, and that was Second Force Recon. And then, of course, from there, I went off to boot camp at Parris Island and came back, went to school for a while, graduated finally, got married, graduated. And by that time, I had finished my enlistment in the Marine Corps. So I was looking around for something to do. And the Coast Guard Reserve Program was looking for policemen. And I was a policeman at the time at the University of Alabama, and they were offering a really good deal. I mean, as far as a high rank and everything, E6 petty officer, you know, and right next to a chief. And so I signed up for that and liked it, doing what I was doing with the port security stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I took a commission. After about 4 years, they offered me a direct commission, and I stayed on for a little bit longer in the reserves and worked. And then one day I got a letter saying, would you be interested in going back full time? And I did. So 25 years later, I retired after almost 40 years of service.
In the midst of all of that, what was your position at the time of 9/11?
9/11, I was the chief administrator. Our administrative officer for the Atlantic area, which encompassed about 35,000 Coast Guardsmen, active and reserve.
You were in Norfolk at the time?
I was in Norfolk. That's where the area commander is in Norfolk, actually in Portsmouth.
Okay.
But my building was across the street from, across the river, actually. So we were responsible for all the personnel issues that were coming up with the response to 9/11, and that we mobilized 4,000 Coast Guardmen to go up there because, once again, we didn't know what the elements were going to be. And so the Coast Guard has port security units which specialize in protecting the port. They're trained to respond and interdict more so, and they're reserve units, and they were all called up to be used in New York, and we made sure that they had a place to sleep and food. I mean, it's a logistical nightmare in the middle of all the chaos that's going on. But you got to take care of all those issues.
Yeah, a lot of issues completely out of the blue. The nation was shocked. You guys needed to respond. So right away when you're watching it, you said you were watching it on a big screen TV at work, and right away it was occurring to you that you and your people needed to figure this out. That was not a problem that was only on TV. It was about to be a big part of your life.
Yes, we knew that. I guess you get accustomed to it because, you know, we deal with hurricanes. We deal with the Cuban boat lift type stuff years ago. So we're trained to, you know, the motto, simple paratus, is be prepared. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, we were not prepared for something like 9/11. I mean, it was
too enormous.
It was too enormous. It was just beyond comprehension.
And then I would think there was the fear of, well, if this was too enormous, who's to say, yeah, what's next?
What's next? And we, you know, that's why you try to cover all your bases and think outside the box. If it's overkill, so be it. You know, you would rather err on the side of caution, mm-hmm. I guess is the word. And we did a lot of things that we could cut back on as time went on. You know, and then when, you know, you still had to enforce things until on the waterfront, at least, in the piers and the docks and everything else.
And that's all New York City is, piers, docks, bridges, tunnels.
And you didn't know if there was any more targets. Mm. I mean, they'd pick the ideal target. Everybody talks about the towers coming down. Nobody ever comprehended that the towers would come down that structurally. So it created just a bigger nightmare than anything else. So everybody trying to get off the island because they didn't know what was going to be the next step. And of course, it wasn't the last thing with the Pentagon and the other plane. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it seems like every time we felt like we were getting ahead of the game and had a handle, then the Pentagon. Oh, okay. And then the next thing you know, we got a plane crash in Pennsylvania. What's going on with that? Mm-hmm. What's next?
Yeah.
You know?
So what did that whole lesson teach you about the training that you had and the people around you in a moment like that? I'm sure there were some decisions you were disappointed in or some inaction or action that you wished hadn't taken place. But overall, what did you take away from that experience?
That we were prepared in a lot of ways. I mean, we train for worst case scenarios always, at least we did. And all the people are highly trained to do what they do because it's repetitive over and over, in particular the reserves, because they spend a lot of time doing that. Mm-hmm. And you still, at the same time, you have all the regular duties that the Coast Guard has to perform. I mean, we didn't shut down. I mean, we still have all the other stuff with the ships coming in to the other ports, search and rescue missions that had to be conducted offshore, things like that, interdiction for law enforcement. All those things continued, and so we felt like we were prepared, and that's where the 4,000 reservists came in, because they were trained to fill the void, because we couldn't pull everybody off of their jobs at one time to respond to that, and not knowing where the next one was. I mean, everybody talked about where's the next spot that's going to be hit. West Coast, they're going to come back to Washington, they're going to hit New Orleans. I mean, it affected everywhere.
And finally, let's wrap up on this. You were involved. Coast Guard, again, is kind of a Swiss Army knife, if you will, and Katrina hits, and you're in the middle of that.
We are. We had all the logistics down there when you had nothing, all the search and rescue that you were trying to do, the helicopters that came from all over. We did pull them out of Elizabeth City. We pulled them out of course, Mobile, and then New Orleans, the air station. It's a naval air station that we have a detachment at, and they were very responsive. Actually, when Admiral Allen, who was placed in charge of the response for the Coast Guard down there, he actually had his headquarters and all at the New Orleans base in Belle Chasse. So, yeah, we were prepared pretty good with that. Logistically, we had things staged everywhere that we could pull and ship into New Orleans. And part of the problem was just getting to New Orleans, getting into New Orleans, you know, getting to the people.
Yeah.
And so we did a better job. I forgot how many thousands of people we took off of rooftops with those helicopters.
Yeah. What branch was it again?
What's the Coast Guard?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh. You end up with the Coast Guard, but you have, it's been quite a career, but at the same time, you had no idea what was ahead of you.
Oh, no, absolutely. If you're talking about when I got off of the bus at Parris Island, if I ever had a career in the military envisioned, I didn't, because I knew when I got off the bus I had made a mistake. Because that drill, the pickup, the pickup drill instructor comes on that Greyhound bus, and he never shuts up. And
your life has changed forever.
Oh, man. I said, man, what am I doing here? And they bring you in the middle of the night, which is part of the plan. Mm-hmm. It's not coincidence. They plan it that way, so you're disoriented. And you get out of the bus, and they got these little yellow footprints printed on the sidewalk, and they want you to fall out and get on those yellow footprints. And I said, wow. You know, 40 years later.
Where's Murphy High at? You're wondering.
Yeah, where's Murphy? Where's South Alabama? I want to go back home, Mama.
Thank you so much for your service, and it was a pleasure talking with you today.
Talking to you. It's a pleasure. Good to see you. Thank you.
There you go, Maury Allen. Both the Marine Reserves and, of course, the Coast Guard, where he spent most of his life.
Well, a fantastic man. One of many there at William F. Green Veterans Home, and one of many veterans in our area. You could say the same about. More Mobile Mornings on the way, live from the Veterans Day Parade in downtown Mobile. Come see us.
FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings, live
where the parade's about to take off for the Veterans Day Parade, and of course that's going to be at 10 o'clock this morning.
It is, and we are in a great spot for that on the Canal Street Service Road, as the parade will line up in front of us on Canal Street, and the man who makes that happen is sitting in Mobile Command Unit with us right now, Pete Ream, a veteran in his own right and a Patriot of the Year just a few years ago.
Veteran of the Year, not Patriot of the Year.
I'm sorry. Veteran of the Year.
Yeah.
And you do such a great job with this every year. I can't imagine the headache involved in the logistics, but you make it work, man. And it's smooth every year. A little different this year, though, Pete.
Well, they keep building stuff and moving my parade assembly area. Every year I have to come up with a new plan, but we managed to do it, and we're lining up. The weather's trying not to cooperate, but it looks like we have a hole in the weather. It's a little misty, but it seems to be easing off, and the parade would roll. So come on down, get on Government Street, and watch a really great parade. We got, like, a lot of units.
Yeah, it looks like we got a good window, too. You mentioned in the weather here. It's been clear for a good hour and should carry us through this parade. And then, of course, all day at the Battleship Memorial Park, as we see every year, they have all kinds of great Veterans Day events going on there, from the luncheon that'll be at noon, the celebration of Parade of Flags, and the concert tonight. It's every year, Pete, I'm surprised, and I shouldn't be, how many veterans, because when you're a veteran, you can pretty much call anywhere home, right? How many of them love living down here in South Alabama and on the coast, and then love being involved in veterans groups like the Mobile Bay Area Veterans Day Commission?
Well, I think, you know, because I'm a Texas transplant, and I think there's a lot of people who love South Alabama for, and one of the couple of big reasons is the people of South Alabama love their veterans. They're patriots. So you never have to worry about being mistreated or disrespected. That's not even on the table. I mean, we see that like when the Navy ships come for Mardi Gras. They're always astounded at how well they're treated, and everybody just makes a big to-do over them whenever they're running up and down the street. And that's how it is here. The people of Mobile, South Alabama, Mobile and Baldwin County, they love their veterans, and they want to show it. And then the other thing is that for us veterans is we have a very close-knit community. We all kind of know each other on both sides of the bay.
Yeah, you look great in white, by the way, Mark.
Well, thank you. I don't know how long I'm going to stay white today.
So, if you come down to
there's
Veterans
your challenge,
if you come down to the Veterans Day Parade, you can say hey to Pete, wave at him. He's going to be a busy man. We're about to be less busy here on Mobile Mornings. Come by and see us. We got all this good stuff.
Come down and see us because we got the parade rolling.
Pete, we appreciate you in so many ways, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, Pete Ream, and more Mobile Mornings from the Veterans Day Parade on the way.
We are live downtown in front of somebody's house. We're on the Canal Road Service Road.
That's right.
Canal Street Service Road, I guess you'd say. Anyway, they've been very very kind, the people whose house we parked in front of, but we haven't heard a peep from them. But we're down here for the Veterans Day Parade. As Pete Ream was saying, it's gotten moved around because of the construction of the tearing down the Civic Center and all the construction going on right there, right next door to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
But the parade is going to roll here pretty soon.
Yeah, in about an hour, 25 minutes, 10 o'clock start to that parade. They are lining up right now. Great chance to come out and see us, get some snacks and food to get you started on your morning, and also talk with some veterans as they prepare for the parade today.
Got a chance to do just that at the William F. Green State Veterans Home. Great pleasure to sit down with U.S. Army Chief Warrant Officer Bruce Allen Terry, and we talked about his career and his time in the military.
I'm with Chief Warrant Officer Bruce Allen Terry, obviously retired. Good morning.
Morning.
Talk about, first of all, where you grew up. This is a pretty interesting story for an Army pilot. you were on the wrong side of the football game.
I was. I grew up as a Navy dependent. We moved quite a bit.
So you moved as often as your dad had to, and that meant what? How many different schools did you have to attend?
I was in 10 different schools before I ever got to high school.
Wow. Did you feel like you missed out on being at one spot, or do you feel like that was actually an education in itself?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
I longed to have buddies that I could keep in touch with. But on the other hand, moving brought new buddies into my sphere that I got to know and like.
Know some still contact today?
Yes, one in particular. Okay.
So then you get your way through high school, 2 years of college,
yes.
Correct? And something comes in the mail in 1975.
Yeah. Draft notice. Oh, Lord. So I went to the recruiter to find out what my options were. And I wound up going to flight school for the Army. The helicopter pulled up flight school at Fort Rucker.
Fort Rucker, okay. So your thought at that point was, rather be in a copter, you'd rather be above the fray than in the fray.
I'd rather be in a helicopter cockpit than a foxhole.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get to some of your honors because they're pretty impressive. We'll get to them in a bit. Just talk about your experience in the Army and how it shaped your future.
Well, I grew up a lot, I'll tell you that. Makes a man out of you, especially when somebody's shooting at you.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened a bit. I never got shot down. I got shot up, but never got shot down.
Hmm. Are there any moments in your experience in the Navy, in conflict or not, that you remember maybe fondly or remember crystal clear?
The one when I was awarded the DFC.
Talk about what that means.
That's a Distinguished Flying Cross. That's held in high regard with most pilots because it's a pilot's award for gallantry and conspicuousness.
So it had to do with rescuing another, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I had to make a pickup of a wounded captain from a saddleback in South Vietnam Delta under fire.
Mm.
And we had to do it with a hoist to give up the side of the helicopter. We hoisted him up.
Hmm. It was almost a trick move that you had to do under, you had no choice.
No. Either he died or we made it.
Wow, 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 wow. It's got to be one of your most proud awards. Then how does that happen? Someone on site that saw the whole thing recommends the award to you?
Yes, so happened that the Corps commander for the Delta saw the act. So the flying that I did, thought highly enough of it to write it up and forward it through channels to my headquarters for the award of the DFC.
It's an amazing story. I'm sure that it's probably even, I would say it's way more amazing than I'm even picturing in my head. It must have stuck with you and does stick with you forever.
It does. That's one of the main things I remember about Vietnam was that particular pickup.
The years were 1967 through 1969, and you were in Vietnam how much of that time?
1 year.
Mm. Wow.
12 months.
You went on to become a commercial pilot. Is that correct?
Yes.
Living the good life, winking at the stewardesses, I guess.
Well, I don't know if I go that far. If I did, I wouldn't have to. I wouldn't name any names anyway.
An award that's the Good Conduct Medal. You got that while in the service. And you say what to that?
No comment.
He kind of said, "If that's the one award that people would roll their eyes a little bit about, that served alongside you, right?"
Yes. Yes.
So, and let's talk about this facility and how long you've been here, and how you sure you feel like you're being taken care of.
Care here is pretty good. Mm-hmm. The food's good. The people are good. I met a lot of people here that I look up to. Mm. Most all of them do a fairly good job of taking care of us.
Anything else you'd like to say to, this is going to be playing on Veterans Day on our radio station, Veterans Day with the parade in downtown Mobile. And so all of our focus the entire month of November, not just Veterans Day, is on those who served, and in your case, someone who served heroically. But just a word about whatever you'd like to say to veterans, or whatever you'd like to say about your experience.
Thanks for your service, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Dan.
Wow. How powerful was that?
What a good man. And really, you don't quite catch it on the interview. A great sense of humor, too. But he was telling me before we rolled the interview, when he got the Good Conduct Award, he said somebody wasn't paying attention. So a great veteran, a great man. And we spoke with two of them, mm-hmm. up at the William F. Greene State Veterans Home. There's a brand new one, you know. The gentleman we spoke to last year, Tom, I believe his name was, the amazing story about crash landing and everything that happened from that, he's now in Enterprise. So okay. There's another state home for veterans in the state of Alabama, brand new, has just opened recently in Enterprise.
I think that brings us to six around the state.
I think you're right.
If they're all as great as William F. Greene Veterans Home, then we are certainly doing, as a state, our veterans a great service. And so many men, like you talked to, U.S. Army Chief Warrant Officer Bruce Allen Terry, U.S. Coast Guard Captain Mari Allen Weeks, who make up those veterans homes and have so many stories to tell of their service. But it's not just in those veterans homes. We talked about with Pete how many veterans call this area home.
Yeah.
And so many of them putting it on the line like they did for years and years. It's just a great time to, on days like today, think about, you know, the sacrifices that they made, and especially as we kind of hit, you know, a turning point here in America with the elections we had last week, whichever way it ends up turning, remember who made it possible to begin with, and that's those veterans.
Those who assured that we could go to the ballots last Tuesday in conflict after conflict. There's not enough ways we can say thank you to the veterans, but we'll just kind of simply keep it at that.
And I see a lot of you on the text line also saying some great things about the veterans, and many of you veterans in your own right. Remember, that parade starts at 10 a.m. this morning, downtown Mobile. We'll be here coming up at Brian Comer with Tobias and Comer joining us here on Mobile Mornings. And welcome back to Mobile Mornings here on FM Talk 106.5. And another edition of Law 251 is here, and in studio with me right now, Brian Comer from Tobias and Comer Law. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Dalton.
So hope things are going well. Of course, we're in a busy time of year here with all these different fall festivals, fall events, and then the holidays that follow, of course. And a lot to keep up with for you and for us, I'm sure. I did want to talk about something that, well, I'm sure that it's drawn your attention here over these recent years as well, but we did our annual Nashville football trip a little while back, I guess a month and a half ago,
And it's noticeable in Nashville. It's been in the past, maybe still noticeable here in Mobile, but certainly big cities around the country. And that's these e-scooters.
Right.
They're everywhere now, Brian.
Right.
They're just showing up there. In Nashville, I mean, I feel like I had to dodge and jump over and walk around scooters all weekend long. And that's not technically the dangerous part of them, right? It's the folks who are actually on the scooters riding around.
Yeah, and, you know, you summed it up well. I mean, because it seems like they just appear overnight out of nowhere. And then when you see them, I was in a city literally last week and was having to walk around or step over them that had been dumped and were laying on the ground. But, yeah, I mean, the danger is that you take the street – quote-unquote street-legal vehicles, and you put them in novices' hands, and then people come zipping down the road or down the sidewalk or, you know, driving in places they're not supposed to be.
Yeah, and I, as much as anyone, I enjoy the videos, the fail videos, the people who get the speed wobbles and really don't know what they're doing out there. And that's funny, but that's because I don't know those people, right? If that was my family member or my child, it'd be something I'd be really worried about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, the last thing in the world people are thinking about when, you know, say they go have lunch or brunch downtown or something here is, you know, oh my gosh, I opened the door to the restaurant to step outside. Am I going to get run over by somebody, you know, going way too fast on a scooter? Mm-hmm. And, you know, to get them is really easy. I mean, it's just an app, and they can be convenient for the people using them, but the same things that we talk about all the time, it seems like, still apply to the scooters, right? The people operating them have to know how to use them, and they have to obey the rules and those safety rules that are there, to make sure that people are safe.
And I guess it's similar to the conversation we've had about golf carts around here for so long. That just because a golf cart is quote unquote street legal, the driver also has to be street legal. So a 14-year-old, 15-year-old that hops in the golf cart, no more legal than if it was a 2-year-old out there driving it. Same thing with these scooters. You said you just need an app in many cases and a way to pay for it via the app. But that could be a 13, 14-year-old out there on that scooter that doesn't know the road rules of the road.
Sure. And, you know, and that's the thing. It's all, you know, I think a lot of times without getting into like a commentary on society, we, you know, try to have kind of binary examples, right? Right or wrong, yes or no, black or white kind of deal. But, you know, it's like a continuum, just like anything else. I mean, there's people who have scooters and who ride them and do perfectly fine and are great on them. What we're really talking about in terms of the people who are renting the scooters and not really understanding how to operate them, not knowing where they are. It's people typically who aren't from here. Mm-hmm. And we obviously welcome everybody coming here. I saw the cruise ship had, you know, 100% capacity and stuff. But those folks who aren't familiar with the roads, who aren't familiar with the area, you know, just need to be extra careful.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And if you're a driver and you're going to work every day in Mobile, or maybe you're just making it downtown for an event, be aware, right? Be in Mobile and all these other cities. If it's a scooter city, they probably need an app that has these all mapped out. But if it's a scooter city, be aware there might be somebody around in that corner that has no clue what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just another example. You know, you want to be aware of your surroundings and make sure that you're being safe, because we can't control what other people do. We talk about that, right, with things like drunk drivers or with even defective products. You don't know when something bad's going to happen. And, you know, we're both dads, and, you know, I feel like my head's always on a swivel around my kids. But, I mean, it's just as important for me just as an individual, too.
Yeah, you do never know when something bad's going to happen, and that's why it's good to have that speed dial or that list in your contacts ready to go. And, you know, Tobias and Comer Law, you're one of them that I have ready there, because you never know when you're going to need to call for some expert information. And we'll move off of this in a second. But, you know, it's one thing for me and you to come in here and say, oh, these scooters that they just leave laying around, they're so annoying and the people don't know what they're doing. But I think it's the stats that really kind of bring attention home to folks sometimes. And you've got some numbers here. It's ridiculous. And it follows the rise of the e-scooters and the rental bikes that are out there. there have been a lot more injuries on the roadways and emergency room visits, and then a lot more people that have died just using these e-scooters.
Yeah, it was really staggering when I saw the numbers. 68 deaths reported from 2017 to 2021 of people using riding the e-scooters. And, you know, I will say that if someone is injured in Alabama, at least, on an e-scooter, then the same rules that apply that we've talked about a lot with, like, UM would apply, underinsured motorist coverage. Mm-hmm. If you get run over by somebody and you're walking on a sidewalk or you're on a bicycle or whatever and somebody hits you, then your underinsured motorist coverage may be there to step in and help.
That is so clutch, the uninsured motorist coverage. You guys have drilled that into my brain, how important it is to make sure you have that. And then, you know, if there isn't a death involving an e-scooter, and I'm sure so many of those came during accidents with actual motor vehicles, right, you can still get crazy injured on those. I imagine the fractures, maybe some of the back and neck injuries that folks have seen over the years, and then the sheer embarrassment of getting caught on video, right?
Sure. But I mean, you know, it's just like injuries on bicycles, injuries you talked about in golf carts, motorcycles, it's the same, right? So in your car, you have crumple zones, you have airbags, you have things that have been designed to absorb impact. On a scooter, it's you and this flimsy piece of metal that you're standing on. And, you know, if you get a pedestrian versus or a scooter rider versus a vehicle, or much less a big vehicle, then bad things can happen. Yeah,
No doubt. Talking with Brian Comer with Tobias and Comer Law for another edition here of Law 251. Let's talk about Tobias and Comer Law. And, you know, I just referred you guys, I referred someone to you guys again earlier this week or late last week that was asking for a local law firm, local personal injury law firm. And I said, yeah, check out Tobias and Comer Law.
Thank you.
It's nothing. You guys get referrals all the time. But it is important when someone has a personal injury case or something that they want to run by a lawyer and say, hey, check this out. What do you think? What do you think my options are from here? The firm matters. Who you choose matters. And anyone who goes out to buy something knows that you need to do a little research on who you're buying that from and what kind of reviews have they gotten. But same thing here with picking a law firm. If you pick the wrong one, well, there's not many do-overs once you get too far down that road, right?
That's true. And I appreciate that. The you know, that's something that we take great pride in, is being a firm that from the moment you walk in the door to the complete conclusion of the case, whether that be means going to trial, whether that means handling an appeal, whatever, that we're capable of handling that. And I always tell people, it's like, look, you know, if you go to a doctor, you want to make sure that the doctor that you're seeing specializes in the thing that you're going for. Mm-hmm. I mean, you wouldn't go to a neurosurgeon if you needed surgery on your foot, you know? And so it's important whenever choosing a law firm. And obviously, like I said, you know, we're proud of the work that we do, but you want to ask the lawyer you're talking to, hey, do y'all do this kind of work? Mm-hmm. And then if I come to you, are you going to be handling the case, or are you going to ship me off to somebody else? Do you try cases, you know, and because that's a big step. And you know, sometimes folks get into a situation where maybe the lawyer doesn't know where the courtroom is, much less, you know, how to try cases. And that's what we do here. I mean, and I'll be the first to tell you, you know, we lose cases too. I mean, mm-hmm. but that's because we're in the courtroom trying cases.
Yeah. And that's some really good advice. Just asking kind of, you know, simple questions when it comes down to it, of the person you were at that point interviewing for that job. Right. And I've always kind of, my wife considers me and I kind of consider myself a bad consumer sometimes, especially in this day and age where, I mean, you could buy something online and if it comes and it's not what you're expecting, pretty much everyone will take that return. And they'll just, and everything's fine. You send it back. It wasn't right. Not the same situation here when you're trying to choose a law firm. No, you can't just send it back and get that return and everything's hunky-dory. Once you make it so far down the road, and I imagine we don't have to go too far into detail on this, but some of these places you call, they may be doing a little smoke and mirrors. You think you're getting something different than what you actually are. You might not even be talking to the person who's on that billboard or who is in your area. It's somebody else who's working your case.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we have a lot of really good, I'll say this, the Mobile Bar is a really good bar association here. And we've got some really good lawyers who do really good work. But it is important because there aren't do-overs. And so when you are getting into the case, you know, you do want to make sure, because, you know, once the suit gets filed and things start moving, then, you know, you really are locked in. And that's not to say that you're locked in with a particular lawyer, but after facts get established, after, you know, we take depositions where we're asking questions under oath, after those things happen, it gets really hard to unwind things that maybe mistakes were made or things like that.
Well, I know you guys have gotten referrals from other lawyers, other professionals in the area and outside the area because of the good work you do, and you would answer those questions just as honestly, if someone came in and said, "Hey, Brian, what do you think about my case here?"
Well, sure. And the, you know, the one of the biggest compliments that we get is when another lawyer thinks enough of us to call, or a person in the community like yourself contacting us to say, "Hey, you know, I have somebody I care about or I know personally. Will you take a look at that?" And that really is a something that we take very seriously, because, you know, we're in this community and we want to do good work and provide a good service for people.
Oh, well, I think that's certainly the case. I hear it from folks all the time. Brian, appreciate you coming in again this morning for another edition of Law 251, and we'll post this up, the podcast, and have it up on our page. And also, of course, it'll make its way over to TobiasComerLaw.com as well. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me, Dalton.
All right, Brian Comer with Tobias and Comer Law and Law 251. You can check out this podcast and many of the others we've done over the years. Again, FMTalk1065.com and TobiasComerLaw.com. Coming up, we have the Jeff Poor Show on the way. That does it for Mobile Mornings right here on FM Talk 1065.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.